Insurance, reminding you to be careful out there on 97.5 1280 The Zone in The Zone Sports Network. This Uinta Golf Masters update with Bob Casper is brought to you by Mountain Land Supply, Zions Bank, Black Desert Resort, and Get Some Guns and Ammo. Now, here's Real Golf Radio's Bob Casper.
Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. This is the problem of not watching this thing continuously. Is that, you know, we'll just be doing the show and look up in the middle of a commercial break and you're not sure if what you saw is live or if it was, you know, several holes ago. But Tony Finau has gotten much, much better here in the second round. To help break it down, here is Bob Casper of Real Golf Radio. Bob, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing good, and I'm liking the way that things are transpiring today. I thought there was going to be a lot of movement today. And there has been. Justin Rose, he's backed off of his 7-under par yesterday and come back to reality with everybody else. And he's down at 4-under par. And Tony Finau is currently 5-under par for the front nine, and he's 3-under par for the tournament. The other guy I'm liking also is Jordan Spieth. He's 1-under for the day through 8 holes. So things are starting to sift around a little bit and mix up, and you're seeing guys move up and down the leaderboard pretty good.
I was going to give you an update, Bob. You are right now. You are a total plus one with your three golfers that you picked. You had
now. Who were my three again? I forgot who they were.
Patrick Reed, Scottie Scheffler, and it was Scheffler, and then your last one. Hold on, let me pull this up. I just had Scheffler. Oh, Cantlay.
Cantlay.
Yeah, okay. Cantlay's hurting you right now. He's plus three. So,
he's the albatross. Huh?
But you've got Reed, who's minus three. So square each other out, and then it comes down to Scheffler, who is right now plus one.
So help me, if Bob beats us, picking after 12 golfers were off the board, and he got to choose three.
Yeah, that would be.
That would be perfect though. That would be classic Bob.
Watching this,
that would be right up my alley, no doubt.
Watching this tournament so far, Bob, I'm curious just your thoughts on the play of it, the flow of it. How's it feeling in kind of a different year coming out of what's been a really tough COVID year? How have you felt so far about the tournament?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. Brian and I were talking about it a little bit this morning. Brian Taylor, who's on Real Golf Radio with us. He's saying a lot of guys are commenting about people that he knows are commenting about the greens and are thinking that if this was the U.S. Open, the players would be complaining about it because it's the Masters. It's not. And in my opinion, it's the severeness of the greens and that kind of thing is not even close to what a U.S. Open would be right now. Guys are still able to score. They're still able to hold shots on greens. Yes, they're difficult. They're firm. They're putting tough and fast, but I think the golf course is a much fairer golf course than a U.S. Open setup. But any time you have firm greens and fast greens, scores are going to be higher. Always are going to be higher because you cannot get the ball as close to the hole. And because of last year in November, with the golf course being moister, guys were able to get the ball closer to the hole, and that's why you saw Dustin Johnson shoot 20 under par. So this is more like what we're normally used to seeing with the Masters, and they're going to try to keep that score right around, I would think, by the time it's all said and done, you know, between 8 and 12 under par. And I think, personally, 8 under par is going to be a great score for this Masters, and it could be the champion.
So much of the final score and the scoring depends on pin placement. Just out of curiosity, who makes the decision? Is that done in advance of the tournament on where they're going to be, or is it day-to-day throughout the course of the tournament where they decide where that pin's going to be the next day?
So, Scotty, traditionally there are four spots on every greens that the Masters uses for their pin placements. Okay? There's four spots.
Okay.
Today you're going to see at the end of round two on the 18th hole, you're going to see that pin in the front right. Okay? Yesterday it was back left. or it was, yeah, it was back left. There's going to be another one back right. And then on Sunday, you're going to see the traditional pin placement on the front left.
And it's the same every year then?
About the same every
year. Okay, interesting.
They adjust the position on the green just a little bit. Now, if they make any changes to the green, then it gives them an opportunity to put a pin in a different spot. But for the most part, you'll see them in the same spots every time. 12, another one. 12 yesterday, it was over the bunker, right in the middle. Today, it's just to the right of the bunker, okay? Tomorrow, it will be front left on 12, and then on the Sunday pin will be front right. And that's the one that catches a lot of water shots coming down the back nine on Sunday. So every green, there are pin placements already set, and they might be adjusted a yard or two one way or the other, but they're always in that same area.
Bob, what is the most famous single shot in Masters history?
It's got to be the shot heard around the world, which was what's his name? he's an older guy. Gene Sarazen. Gene Sarazen had a four-wood shot into the 15th hole where he made double eagle to get in the playoff, and he ended up winning the Masters. That's the most in Masters history. That's the most relevant or known best shot ever.
What about Bubba out of the pine straw?
You know, Bubba was out of the pine straw was a great shot, but even better than that is Tiger on the 16th hole where he was off the side of the green and he holed it.
Yeah, that's the one that Lloyd and I were thinking of when you were answering that, where it held on that Nike logo for about two or three seconds.
Yep. That's in modern times. That's got to be the most definite, the best shot ever.
I'm trying to figure out why Bubba bending it out of the pine straw replays more in my mind. Is that even in the top five?
Because
that was for the win too, right? That was
to get it into position where he could make the putt to win in the playoff, and that was his first Masters win. You know, Gene Sarazen, he held a four wood for a two on a par five. That's a double eagle. And Tiger, he held a shot from off the green, a pitch shot from off the green when he was like, he had no business getting it that close to the hole, and he knocks it in the hole. So, you know, when you're talking about a hole out, I think that's the shot that is most notable. Whereas Bubba's shot out of the pine straw was a great shot, and every time I'm on 10, I walk over into where it was to look at it and see how much he had to bend it out of the trees from left to right and that kind of thing. But it set him up for a putt to win the tournament.
Bob, I know that there's a dress code out here. We see the guys in slacks, a belt, and a collared shirt, some type of polo shirt. Are there any other quirky dress codes that we need to know of? And will we ever see them be forced from having to wear slacks to maybe someday putting on shorts?
Well, they put on shorts on the PGA Tour in practice rounds. And also at the PGA Championship, they can wear shorts in practice rounds.
Is that new?
At Augusta, it's been about a year or two, maybe.
That's it, huh?
But Augusta is traditional with slacks the whole time. I think the U.S. Open is traditional with that, and the British Open, of course, you're not going to wear shorts because it's normally cold over there in July. So,
interesting. Bob Casper right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Do caddies get to keep their overalls? Does BT have his overalls from when he caddied for your dad?
No, you turn them in every day, and you get a new set every day. They're washed. So, yeah.
If I was BT, man, I would have stuffed those in a bag and took those home with me.
You know, it's funny. They have patches with the name patch that goes on the back. They have a player number patch that goes on the left chest, and the Augusta National logo patch that goes on the right chest. And everything has to be checked in every day. Mm. When you take it out, they give you everything. When you go back, you have to check it in every day.
Wow.
So they keep a good tie on it.
When you're a regular club member and you're playing, do the caddies wear the same thing?
Yeah, they wear white coveralls. Uh-huh. You bet.
Interesting.
Yep.
Hey, Bob, I know that they had approved rangefinders. Are they using rangefinders out here today? Or?
No, they don't use rangefinders. They have approved rangefinders, but they don't use them in tournament proper. And you know, they use them for practice rounds and that kind of thing to get distances and everything, but for the most part, they don't use rangefinders.
How much abuse do some of these caddies take? Do they take a lot of heat? We saw the video of Bubba Watson just lighting into his caddy once because he said, that's the distance you want to go with? That's it. How often do the caddies become the guy that gets beat up over a bad shot?
Well, that's the only guy around that the player can really exhibit some frustration on, because you're a team out there. So caddies kind of understand that some things are going to happen, but some caddies don't stand for it. Some caddies at some point have had enough that they get another, you know, they get another job with another player or something like that. So it just depends. Now Bubba Watson's caddy, his name is Ted. And
same guy over all these years?
Yeah, and he's a great guy. Ted is a great guy, and he and Bubba are a team, and Ted understands Bubba's frustrations that exhibit themselves sometimes on the golf course, but Ted and Bubba are like best friends. And it's just part. You just have to go with it. You know, when I caddied on tour, when I caddied for my dad, or even caddied for Keith Clearwater out on tour, you just have to kind of be the sounding board, and you have to be able to let it just slide right off your back. It's not that big a deal.
Can you overrule something on one of them? Like, could you be like, hey, Dad, no, put that away. You know that this is the right thing, and kind of force the moment?
I wouldn't have done that with my dad, but I would have done it with Keith Clearwater.
Not doing it with Pops, though, huh?
No, I wouldn't have done that with Pops.
What's the stand? I mean, I'm sure everybody kind of negotiates their own thing, but what is it, 10%? What do caddies get out of their purse?
You know, it just depends on player to player. Some players get some caddies get a flat rate. I know Ernie Els paid one of his caddies a flat rate of, I think it was $5,000 a week. And you know, and he's playing 30 events a year. And he gets to travel with him and all that kind of thing on his jet and that kind of stuff. So that's one way. Most of the time, you get a base salary for the week, and that could be anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500. And when I was caddying for my dad, and that was back in the 90s, 80s and 90s, I was getting $500 a week and 5% of whatever he won.
Okay.
So on tour, now because of the money and all that kind of, the escalation of money and that kind of thing, most caddies are making $1,000 to $1,500 a week base. You get 5% if you make the cut. If you finish top 10, you get 7%. And if you win a golf tournament, you get 10%. That's normally what the pay scale is.
So it can add up pretty quick.
Yeah. So, you know, you might make $1,500, and if your player wins the tournament and he wins $1.8 million, you know, you're going to make $180,000 that week.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a completely ridiculous question, but I have to ask it. Is it allowed for a caddy to give his player like a shoulder ride or a piggyback ride from hole to hole?
There's the moment. There's always that moment where we have a really good interview, and then
man, they're not linebackers, man. They're not going to give their caddy.
I'm just wondering, like, if I'm out there and I'm struggling, I'm like, man, my legs are so tired. Ted, can I jump on your back?
So these guys walk anywhere from 7 to 10 miles a day.
Yeah.
On a golf course, and they're used to doing it. And they do it every day. They do it in practice rounds. They do it in tournament days, everything. So it's not that big a deal. I can remember when I was caddying, I would go out on tour with Keith. And if we had had a couple of weeks off, You know, you jump back in and you throw the bag on your shoulder, and the first couple of days you are just absolutely wiped out. By the third day, everything kicks back in and you're fine again. The bag becomes lighter, your legs feel better, all that kind of thing. So it's these guys are conditioned to do this. This is what they do on a day in and day out basis. And a lot of people don't think that golfers do a lot athletically, but you know, the amount of holes of golf that they walk every week and every year is quite a bit. And they're working out daily also. The game has changed. Guys are in the gym and they're doing core strength stuff, and they're doing all the squats and the lunges and they're doing the deadlifts and all that kind of stuff. And it's a different game now. These guys are athletes, and that's why you see them hit it so far.
I get down with a round, and I'll be excited if I played the same ball the whole round. How often would Jordan Spieth change out a ball in 18 holes?
He might go through a dozen golf balls in 18 holes.
And that's just off a changeout. Because I see him always flip it to their caddy. Does their caddy wash it, or did their caddy change it out?
So a lot of times what will happen is when the caddy cleans off the golf ball, you know, when the ball hits the green and you clean it off so you can putt, so it putts great and stuff, the caddy might notice a blemish on there from like a wedge shot where the grooves have gripped the cover of the golf ball. And so the player has to finish up his hole with that golf ball. And then, but when he hands it back to his player, he'll say, "Hey, check that ball. It looks like there's a couple of groove lines on it," or something like that. And so when he gets done putting on the hole or whatever, he'll throw it to the caddy, and the caddy will give him a new ball.
Okay.
Because you don't want anything to affect that ball in flight when it's flying, to cause it to go offline or anything like that. So any of those little blemishes or whatever, they'll change the ball out. And I would say, I always had, when I caddied for Keith, I always had a dozen golf balls in the bag. When I caddied for my dad, we would change one every 3 to 6 holes. So
I keep about 2 dozen, but that's for different reasons, though.
But it's not for the reason of a blemished golf. It could
be a
blemished golf ball, or because you can't find it.
Yeah.
Bob, I'm sorry. I'm so all over the place right now. I've got so many questions. So we're watching. There's so many scandals right now in baseball. Scotty, you see the pine tar thing that's going on right now?
Oh, yeah.
Are there substances that are illegal? And can people load the head of their driver? Do they weigh those things? You know, like, everybody tries to cheat in baseball. Are people trying to cheat in on the tour in golf?
Well, traditionally, like a driver or something like that, the face can only give so much, and most of the drivers that the players use are conforming, but the rules officials will indiscriminately test drivers for players to make sure that the driver they have is conforming. There's not really anything like pine tar or anything like that. You know, I know back in the day when you didn't have a lot of television coverage like they talked about, guys would put chapstick on the face of their driver, and that doesn't make sense.
Like
pine tar or whatever, to give it a little bit of a go or to help it to not spin as much. But you don't see any of that stuff anymore. I mean, the equipment, the golf ball, everything is maxed out to its max ability right now. Now it's the physicality of the guys that are playing. You know, the Brysons and Dustin Johnsons and those guys that are looking so much stronger and so much fit. That's what's causing the golf balls to go so far right now. I don't think it's the equipment or wanting to roll back the ball. It's just that guys are more physical and everything now than they used to ever be.
Well, speaking of which, is there drug testing on tour?
There is. Hmm. Yep. Guys get tested every week.
For street drugs or performance enhancers? Or
everything.
Both? Okay.
Yep, everything. Because because it's considered an Olympic sport, they have to conform to that.
Did Abraham answer? Did he mean to touch that sand? Have you seen the video?
No. Yeah, I've seen it, and it was just a barely touch. He got a penalty for it. He didn't mean to do it. He got a penalty for it, and it used to be, I think a couple of years ago, it used to be that if he signed that scorecard and then they saw that he touched the sand like that and he signed the scorecard for lower than what his actually score could have been, he would have been disqualified. But that rule was changed a couple of years ago, and they don't disqualify you now for not having taken that penalty stroke once they've seen it after the round is over.
Well, hey, we appreciate it as always. Great catching up with you. I know this was a random interview today, but a lot of good insight, though.
It was, man. You guys were all over the board, especially you, Hans.
I always am, Bob. But, you know, I've always got questions, brother. Always got questions. I'm always trying to learn, Bob.
You can ask him anytime, buddy.
I appreciate it.
That's a great thing about Bob. Take every question seriously.
He will.
He's like, even the piggyback rides down the
green. One more update. Tony Finau just birdied the 10th hole, so he is now 6 under par.
That is not an easy hole to birdie either, is it?
Number 10? No, it is not.
He's
playing well, though.
Good news for Lloyd and I. Scotty has Tony Finau in his 3, just so you know, Bob.
Scotty, good for you, buddy.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Good pick.
Okay.
Hey, you're the best, Bob.
Well,
appreciate it.
You know what? It would make my heart happy for you to win with Tony Finau.
Ah, see, there we go.
He's shaking his head.
No, he means it.
I guarantee he's shaking his head.
He means it.
And it's not because of you. It's because of Tony.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? I'll take it any way I can get it.
Awesome. Thanks, Bob.
All right, guys.
Bob Casper, Real Golf Radio. You'll hear it tomorrow morning right here on the Zone Sports Network.
So you've got Tony Finau, who's now at 4 under, Scotty. Jordan Spieth is up to 2 under. So here come some of the big names. Day 2, some of the big names starting to climb the board. Justin Thomas is at 1 under. He's starting to climb. Colin Morikawa is starting to climb. So,
of course he is.
It's looking like a better day for everybody. Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah, he's above the cut line.
DeChambeau?
Bryson is, yes. He's 1 under on the day.
Is Bryson through 10 holes? Oh, yeah, he's.
You know what's going to happen?
Barely.
Happened to him, he's going to make the cut, and then he's going to fall apart.
He'll be the guy that's 12 over.
Yeah, Bryson is 1 under on the day, and he is currently above the cut line.
All right, Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. A lot of you out there have been dealing with some ED issues, and you thought, okay, well, I don't want the pill. I don't want any injections. Certainly don't want any surgery down there. Well, guess what? You don't have to worry about it. Andrew Reinhart's going to tell you why. How you doing, Andrew?
I am doing well today, guys. And yes, this is a big transition that's taking place from medication and pills to acoustic wave therapy for erectile dysfunction. Wasatch Medical uses the two most advanced versions. And guys have heard us talk about this before. But here's a new thought. Think about this. 2 to 3 weeks from now, you're done with these treatments. That's what the Cambridge study says is the magic number. You can throw the pills away. You turn back the clock a little bit in the bedroom. We've seen 60-year-old guys get back to function like they were 40. We've seen 50-year-old guys get back to function like when they were 30. This is helping so many guys in the bedroom improve blood flow when it counts, where it counts.
801-901-8000. And the great thing to get it all started is a free assessment. I love that you offer this up for free.
Yeah, it really is a lot of value, and it's a good way just to come in and kind of feel out the situation. See if you like the treatments. You get a lot of free whether you do the treatments or not, but it's an assessment. It's an exam, a blood flow ultrasound to test your blood vessels. You'll actually get a rating on blood flow. Really cool. That's free. A little gift that produces immediate results in the bedroom. Guys can't get enough of that. That's free, and testosterone right now to new patients is free. So a ton of value. Put a stop to the ED. Call us now. It's no charge.
801-901-8000. That's 801-901-8000. It's all right here at 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
The Big Show. The Big Show. With Jake Scott and Gordon Monson.
Sam Amick with us from The Athletic, working on the free agency files. Who's going to possibly be out there? Somebody on your list is Mike Conley. What kind of market might await him if he chooses to test it?
Mike has made it real clear he wants to re-sign in Utah. The Jazz have a chance here with Mike to have, I think, a run at title contention for the next several years. It would seemingly be a no-brainer, but signing Mike to a big-time deal is going to put them deep into the luxury tax. That's the only if to me. I'm not hearing any noise as of yet about Mike looking at greener pastures. But that being said, it's free agency. The way he's shooting the ball, the way he's still showing that he can play at a high level, I mean, Mike certainly is going to get plenty of attention.
Catch the Big Show weekdays from 2 to 7, presented by Big O Tires, the team you trust, on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. All right, let's start with the good. And look, I don't condone trespassing. I don't condone trying to pretend to be somebody you're not. But I do like the fact that this guy, for a moment, was able to live his best life. A homeless man realized that the security around USC and its sports facilities was fairly lax, decided to spend a couple days living the life of a USC athlete.
Oh, okay.
Apparently this, I don't know if he's young or just looks young, but he was able to mix in with athletes and nobody really said anything. Apparently spent some time sleeping in a suite at the Coliseum, decided to walk into the football facilities. He shared a jacuzzi at the McKay Center with other football players. He ate at the dining room facilities without being questioned or having any issues whatsoever.
Wow, it's going to be good food.
Yeah. You know what finally did him in and got him caught is that he was able to walk into the locker room. He was assigned a jersey and pads and a helmet. What finally got him caught was that he actually got in line and started fielding punts. And that is when the coaches realized that this guy was an imposter.
Boy, I thought you
this
were really
is not a true story.
I thought you were a lot more athletic.
It's a 100% true story.
This cannot be.
Yeah. He said that they said he was able to blend in with football players because he looked their age and he told everyone he was just a walk-on. The quote from one of the security sources, if he hadn't tried to return punts at practice, he might still be out here because nobody really noticed him. Again, not condoning what he did, but it is somewhat of an amusing story.
That's crazy.
I'm having a hard time believing this one, first and foremost.
Well, it's 100% true.
This isn't from The Onion?
No, it is not from The Onion. In fact, there's the police reports because he was arrested for trespassing.
Oh, he got arrested? Oh, come on. He's just being creative.
So it was his inability to field a punt was like, wait, this guy's not one of us.
Whoa, wait a minute.
It walks like a duck.
Come on. Even those guys that go out at halftime to field punts can at least field some punts.
Quacks like a duck.
At a Utah game or a BYU game or whatever. You know, they have that win or whatever. Yeah, they can do that. Come on. He couldn't get away with that?
You can tell pretty quickly.
Yeah. I know.
That is a giveaway. And you know he's wondering, what line should I get in? Where do I fit in?
This reminds me of the You Love Major League. Remember when they catch Willie Mays Hayes?
Willie Mays Hayes.
I've been caught already?
they pick up his bed and just move it to the outside. Yeah. Pretty impressive, here's the thing. You can't let yourself get caught. You can't go out there and actually practice. Like, when it's practice time, you disappear. You go back up to your suite in the Coliseum, and you go catch a nap. You don't go out there and try to...
Not a chance. No.
Yeah, you go never-ending story, and you go up in that library, and you read a book.
You know...
You go up in there.
In the AFL, arena football, when it was at its peak, when it was at its height, It was fun. It was a great time. Good fans. They paid us pretty well. I mean, they got paid pretty well to play football. Still six figures, and it was nice. One of the things that always bugged me about the AFL, Scotty, every year in the AFL, they did a fan appreciation event where they would dress up three fans, men, and they would allow them to come practice with us. I always hated it. I was always like, I can't believe somebody's going to be in our locker room, and I can't believe they're going to put pads on somebody and put them in our practice. And I remember every time they'd line up against me, I would go full tilt. I mean, full bonkers tilt. Because I wanted them to understand, you think this is cute, and you might have played high school, but I bench 550 pounds, I squat 650, this is my life, and you're kind of making a mockery of it by being in those pads and across from me.
Yeah.
And I would grab that guy, and I would plant him and throw a knee in his gut. For good or for worse.
God, you're...
I just wanted
and
to
here I thought Scotty was the fun sucker.
I just wanted to send him home thinking, you know, I don't want to do fan appreciation anymore. Ever again. It kind of sucks I got picked for that.
They're kind of there for you. They're your fans.
Yeah, the fan part.
They're wearing your jersey.
And
they love you.
Don't think I wasn't the only one targeting him either.
Oh, man. I don't want to hear this.
Everybody was
targeting. It's just ruined.
Everybody.
Well, look, at least you kind of matured out of it.
A little bit.
I mean, that sounds like something that somebody would do when they're blocking the shot of a cancer survivor or something like that at a charity basketball event.
Oh, yeah, that's not a good thing. But think of it this way, like some Joe Blow's like, oh, man, I get to be in the booth calling the Utah State game with Scott Girard, and I get two quarters of the call.
That's way different.
And it's like, wait a second.
It's not like they're bringing him out and playing in the actual game. It's just for fun, right?
I don't know. They shouldn't have put him in pads. It was a bad idea by the AFL.
I love that some guys got broken ribs. They're just laying on the ground.
Oh, man. But I always, I put my arm around him on the way off the field and be like,
hey, nothing personal.
Hey, fella.
But you see those stands up there? That's where you need to stay.
Hey, Rudy, why don't you get out of here?
You imagine if Rudy played against Hans, that would not have ended well for Rudy.
Well, think about this, though. Would either of you guys ever want to put on pads and go out there with, the front line of the Kansas City Chiefs?
Or? Hell no. No, absolutely not.
So that's the way we always looked at it. We're like, how come you're doing this? What are you getting from this? And we always think, what is the AFL doing? I know that. So it's kind of an interesting concept, actually. The AFL thought outside of the box, how can we draw viewers? It's to Draymond Green's question of, okay, I understand that there's a pay gap with female sports. I get it. You've complained enough about it. Now do something. That's what Draymond Green is saying. That's what the AFL did. They were like, okay, we have no...
By the way, that has not gone well for Draymond.
I know. And he just needs to continue to, because I know exactly where he's coming from.
I know what he's saying.
I get exactly what he's saying. And that's the problem in today's world is everybody just wants to pick a couple of things. And I'm not a Draymond fan or an apologist. You know that.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
But Draymond is just saying, stop complaining about it and figure out a way to change it. If you got to force the hand of these people, force the hand of them. But just sitting there saying we need to level out pay gap, and the Rapinoe's like, oh no, we've done everything we can. No, you haven't, because you still don't have the viewers and you still don't have the money. And Draymond's saying, let's figure out how to get the money.
Yeah.
I want you to have money. It's the same I feel with my girls. I think that women's collegiate volleyball is as exciting of a sporting event to watch. Period. It's incredible. I've always loved it. It's at high pace, high flying action.
And I would much rather watch women's volleyball than men's volleyball.
Absolutely. And women's volleyball to me is just pure excitement. Love it. But how do I monetize it? How do I get other people to believe that? How do we then get people to pay $20 to come into the arena? How do we pack it and then get the girls the money that they deserve? How do we go to TV and network producers and explain to them how this is going to make them money? What can we do? Because we've got to do something. And the AFL did a couple creative things, man. The fan participation was one that probably didn't work out well for the fans. But the other thing is they set up tables and they let all the fans in the arena come down.
Yeah.
And we were all required to be there for an hour post-game signing autographs.
I can't imagine how hard that would be, especially after a loss. But it did do wonders for the popularity of the league.
It did, because there's something about bringing your kid down around a 6'7",
yeah,
330-pound offensive lineman that it just looks like he's ready to eat through a cow.
Yeah, and if the guy shows any level of engagement, like, hey, buddy, you know, you play football. Yeah, you keep at it, man. We'll see you out here soon. And you've got that kid hooked for life.
Hooked for life.
And watch what I'm going to do to your dad.
Are you
see?
I just arm wrestled your dad. You should be embarrassed you have his same bloodline.
Get out of here.
I did not do that.
Okay.
That was fan. That was
That was a fan appreciation.
That was a fan
Apparently
appreciation.
Apparently you don't like fans.
Radio.
That was post-game appreciation, man.
All right. We're still stuck on the good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
I brought this up with Bob. Abraham Answer. And have you seen the video?
I did. Yeah.
Oh. The club touches like 8 grains of sand.
Yeah.
And I've got to imagine, and Lloyd, you might know this too, like every player at some point in this tournament is probably going to touch some sand with their club. But Answer gets a 2-stroke penalty attached to his 43, ends up with a 45. He's kept a positive attitude with this, but the camera shows it. And when you go and look at the camera, it couldn't be any more close up on his club. And it just shows the club touched the top of like 6 grains.
Yeah.
And that's a 2-stroke penalty.
The ruling, the touching of the sand was deemed visible to the naked eye.
All right, fella.
How you doing? Had this not been the case, the video evidence would have been disregarded and a penalty would not have been applied.
Oh, man. Did you say eye or guy?
Eye, the naked eye.
Oh, the naked
not
eye.
Not the naked guy. No.
I was like, what the heck? The naked eye.
What the hell is there a naked guy in here for?
And what the heck's a naked eye?
Hey, Bob, put some clothes on in that replay booth. What are you doing? Hot in here.
Well, what's a naked eye?
AC's been down since Wednesday. What do you want me to do?
I could see your eyeball being like, I've got to get some jeans on. It's freezing in here. What is the naked eye?
You ever heard that reference before?
Yeah, because it's a movie, isn't it?
No, that's naked,
of the
gun.
Naked gun.
Oh, that's the naked gun.
What are you
gun?
Talking about? Oh my. Naked eye, like could see that without like a magnifying glass.
It's a Friday, folks.
Could see that without a telescope or glasses.
You know, Bob,
naked.
Bob Casper has probably given thousands of interviews, and today he was asked if a caddy can give his golfer a piggyback ride. Fairway. I just think we ought to take a moment and just appreciate that question was asked. Hey, golf is tiring.
Do you think Bob's going to come on tomorrow or do you think he's not?
Well, I hope not. Oh, during his show, maybe. He won't be on our
show.
No,
he loves it.
Bob's so gracious. He could have been like, hey, that's dumb. Move on. Next question.
You know what? It's an interesting question. If a guy's who's the dude that dealt with vertigo?
Jason Day.
You know, if this guy's like, hey, I will carry you down the fairway.
Yeah,
we just
right.
got to get
what
through
I'm
this.
But that's what
you
I'm
know
talking
what?
About.
The more you think about it, it's not actually.
Yeah. Scotty, is that, stop it.
No, not stop it. No, what if you got a terrible
what are you
like,
doing?
Cramp or something? And you've got like three
then
holes.
Then you stretch it out a little bit. It might slow play down a little bit, but you're going to have to stretch it out.
Okay,
figure it out.
What was the question answered? Can you get.
He did not answer the
can
question.
Can you get a ride from your caddy? That's all I'm asking.
You try to give somebody a piggyback through Augusta. Are you kidding me? All the hills up and down?
While carrying their bag?
While carrying their bag.
You got their bag and them?
Are you crazy? Imagine if it's El Pato.
only saw one pair of footprints in that sand, in that trap.
It's Craig Stadler. Oh. I don't know, Craig.
The walrus is going to kill somebody.
I don't know. I like the 5% of the purse, but I ain't
taking you up to 10.
I'm not taking you up 11.
Craig, it's a 50-50 split if I do this.
Oh, eat more beef, Lowry. Like, I can't go another step.
Oh, man.
Either can I, beefs.
I'm crying over here.
Either can I. With that 1 foot in the bunker. Oh. It's a legitimate question that needed to be asked. It may not have happened yet in golf, but at some point, maybe.
You never know.
Somebody just
if like, you can't have a cart, then you can't have a piggyback.
Okay, no, honest question though. Like when Tony blew out his ankle in the par three competition a couple years ago, remember?
But could still go.
But he still played. But let's say that happened on 18 and he could still swing a club, but he can't walk.
Won't finish the round.
He won't?
Nope.
What if his caddy's like, hey, look, man, it's just one hole. I can pick you up and carry you to your next shot.
Hey, didn't John Daly get exception to drive a car?
I don't think they ever gave it to him.
Oh, did they not?
No, and if he did, that was like on the maybe the senior tour. But I think they declined him.
I just remember Daly crying about it nonstop.
Like, look, John, we know why you don't want to walk.
I have terrible gout. I need to have the cart. We're not giving you a cart, John.
I'm not giving you a cart because you're six deep.
This is gout discrimination.
All right.
You're 16. We don't want you in the lake. We're not worried about giving you
drive
you a
that cart right into the. All right. You know what? Let's move ugly into roulette. How about that? Hands and Scotty, Whole World News coming up next here on the Zone Sports Network.
This is DJ and PK.
In college at San Diego State, a guy texts in, my neighbors the Hughes thought about naming their son after Marshall Faulk. Thought about it? Why didn't they do it?
You're not catching on, Dave. What's their last name? You're just
so
naive.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Here.
Yeah. Well, I was going for Marshall U.
No.
Oh, I got it now. Sorry. My bad.
You're so freaking naive, Dave.
This is why we love you.
You're not exactly a street smart guy.
Marshall U's not that bad.
No. I think it's more the last name.
So you
name.
Really like the Thunder and Herd, do you?
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
We've got the whole world in our hands.
You've got the whole world in our hands. We've got the whole world in our hands. We've got the whole world in our hands. We've got the whole world in our hands. You've got you and me, brother.
Hey, if somebody's on Twitter watching the Masters, I need to know where the where it went.
How do we find this?
Because we were watching ESPN, and then they flipped over to blah, 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 SportsCenter, blah, blah, blah. Like, is it on TNT? Like, where did it go to?
I don't know. We were watching.
I just went to TNT. It's not there.
Okay.
We're having a blast with this. Is it the Golf Channel, they basically it's Nota Begay that just sits there and talks, right? That's all the Golf Channel is, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, that's not a bad thing to go to, but that's not it.
Nope. Scotty, in today's Whole World News, a couple different stories. And I'm having a hard time choosing between the two. But I think I want to talk about this Australian guy. This is something that happened back in 1965 when this Australian man, his name's Brian Robson, was 19 years old. He's now writing a book about it. And he does have the backing and credibility of the FBI.
Yeah.
Brian Robinson, at the age of 19, was living in Australia back in 1965. He and two buddies were trying to get Brian back to England. He had family in England. But to get him to England, it was going to cost about $700 at the time. It was an extremely expensive thing to get him back to England on a flight. They could have that same flight with a crate that was about the size of a man for $60. So he and his two buddies hatched this plan to put him in the crate and send him to England in a crate that was just the size for his body to fit.
Okay.
And it turned into a nightmare, a complete mess and nightmare. Number one, he learned really quickly that nobody pays attention to the sign this side up. And the box wasn't big enough for him to turn around. So when they placed him upside down, he was upside down. When they placed him, you know, end up, he would be end up. And he learned really quickly that they're also really aggressive.
Yeah.
With crates.
Yeah, yeah.
And so his crate was getting thrown around. Then he learned that the cabins aren't pressurized where they take the crates. He passed out multiple times, nearly froze to death, and had all of these complications. Nearly died.
Yeah. Surprised he didn't, honestly.
And then when the plane finally landed, there was a crack in the crate, and a guy heard some wrestling in the crate and looked down and saw the eyeball in the crate of this guy, Brian Robson.
Yeah.
And freaked out, thought it was a dead body.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So started, and at that point, Brian had been in that crate for nearly 24 hours, 17 to 18 hours.
Jeez.
And this guy's freaking out, and Brian's just barely conscious. Well, they end up cracking the crate, and they get this guy out, and this guy is speaking plain American. And Brian Robson, the 19-year-old that just snuck from Australia to what he thought would be England, was actually in L.A. Apparently, his buddies that he's trying to find. Yeah. Since 1965, he's been looking for his two buddies that helped fix the crate, put it on, and put the labeling on.
Yeah.
Apparently, his buddies
sent
him to L.A. And this guy's writing a book. It's a whole book.
Oh, my gosh. I will read this book.
I can't wait for it. Here's a couple things. He said, the problem is, at the time, we made an agreement that this would all be a secret because none of us expected any publicity. I mean, the idea was I would get to London and I would get out of the crate and disappear, go home, and nobody would ever be the wiser. Unfortunately, the whole thing went wrong, and the book is called The Crate Escape. So just The Crate Escape. He said, it was terrifying. I was passing in and out of consciousness. I had a lack of oxygen. Oh, it was very bad. He played with the idea of breaking free of the crate, but he said to himself that he'd done all this to this point. He said, you cannot embarrass yourself now. You're going to go ahead and break through the box and embarrass yourself, and then I'm done. So he stayed in the box. He said for 6 to 7 hours of the flight, he thought he was going to die. That was parts of the flight that he was conscious. This whole thing is quite the story. Oh, and then right here is what I wanted to read. Said the Americans, the FBI, the CIA, and everyone else that was called to the scene, they were brilliant. I mean, I fell in love with America because I've never been treated so well. Everybody there really looked after me, and they just thought, oh, it's this silly kid getting himself into trouble. They ended up putting him on an American Airlines flight, first class, and flew him to London for free.
Really?
After they found him in the crate, which would not happen nowadays.
No.
Just back in the good days.
Yeah, back then, everybody has a good laugh about it, and we move on. Now you're probably getting waterboarded in Gitmo.
Yeah. Sadly, but that might be a little extreme, but yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, we just live in a heightened sense now. I mean, I'm joking, yeah. But I mean, it's just like you can't mess around with stuff like that.
What is your plan? And you're like, I'm 19. I was wanting to get to London.
Plus, there's no way you would have made it through all the screening. Like, the, you know, that thing's going through x-rays. Like, those human bones, and are they moving?
20 dog sniffing detectors. And yeah, you'd never make it now. But a crazy story.
Hans and Scotty right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone, 801-901-8000. That's the number to call right now. If you do, you can get a free assessment. If you're dealing with ED, you can talk to a real physician and get that free assessment courtesy of Wasatch Medical. And Andrew, I love the fact you call in with the free.
Yes, we bring a lot of value to the table. The assessment with the doctor will determine if you're a good candidate for these treatments. And we're talking about the acoustic wave therapy, the two most advanced versions. We have gotten so good with these treatments, opening up and regrowing blood vessels. I would invite listeners, spend a little time on the science page at wasatchmedicalclinic.com, and you can scroll for hours through clinical study after clinical study saying this is an effective treatment for ED, whether it's really mild, moderate, or severe. It's been tested and tested. It improves blood flow. It repairs the blood vessels. It even can repair nerve damage if you feel like you've got some of that. And that's leading to the ED. This is a revolution. I think the pill may someday be a thing of the past. We're kind of transitioning away from treating the symptoms of erectile dysfunction to actually trying to fix the problem.
It all starts with that free assessment. Call 801-901-8000. And the great thing about this whole process, it has an end date, too. You know, what, 2 to 3 weeks?
Yes. The Cambridge study said that 3 weeks is the magic number. If you're taking the pill for ED, I hate to say it, you'll be taking it for a long time, maybe forever. You go through two, 3 weeks of treatments. That's all you'd need. Not likely that you'll have to come back. You'll probably get a long-lasting result. It's all about when the intimate moment strikes in the bedroom, you know, you can perform. That's spontaneity. That's on-demand function. And as far as I know, this is the only treatment that can restore that.
801-901-8000. Call right now. 801-901-8000. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone.